Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
Lads, Ridley Scott's latest release, Napoleon, which I'm going to see on Friday, it hit our cinema screens over the weekend and is described as an epic that details the checkered rise and fall of French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte, which would nearly make you believe that the film itself is historically accurate. Like, I don't know, Braveheart and 300 and Pearl Harbor or any of those movies based on historically important events or prominent historical figures. Well, it's not. It's not. And I can't wait to have this argument with Lau, who worked on the movie, when we go see it on Friday. It is not. And even the movies I've mentioned so far are full of historical inaccuracies. Professional historian and book editor Dr. Connor Reedy joins me now to discuss some of these inaccuracies, which are mind-blowing, and a few other movies that are very popular that you might have thought of. Connor is on the line. Is he on the line? Yes, he's on the line. Connor, how's it going?
Jennifer, good morning. What an absolute blast to be on your show. How are you?
It's great to have you, Connor. Where in the country are you based? Where are you?
Well, you had somebody on from Antarctica earlier.
You're from Antarctica?
I'm afraid I'm in Tipperary. So
same. I hear it gets just as cold to Tipperary. It's great to have you on and talk about something quite interesting and things that we never really think of. Let's talk about Napoleon. What is it about Napoleon that has, you know, some of the historians arguing with Ridley Scott?
Well, first of all, did you know, and I only discovered this in my vast research for our conversation this morning, did you know that there are at least 100 screen depictions of Napoleon?
No.
So in other words, he has been in as either a major character or a minor character in at least 100 movies or television shows. Now, I've seen that estimate go up to as far as 170. So that's something for a start. So he's a historical figure that really is very seductive, if you like, for filmmakers to include because of his extraordinary life and because of his extraordinary career.
Mm.
Now, yeah, so that's not answering your question. First of all, but that's what historians do. We're like politicians. We answer the question we want to answer. So, you know, I'm told I'd be a great politician.
Oh, you'd be great. But listen, no, but with Napoleon, said it there. You said he makes an interesting character. He's quite sexy to make a film about. And, you know, the movie's tagline, he came from nothing. He conquered everything. Is that true?
Well, you see, that's not actually true because his dad was, in fact, a minor aristocrat and lawyer. Now, they weren't rich, but in saying that, he did attend school eventually in his school-going years in mainland France, and he eventually graduated from a French military academy. That's not coming from nothing, really, you know.
Okay.
Now, he did conquer quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't conquer everything. He didn't conquer England.
Yeah.
That was his undoing. So, yes, he was very impressive. Yes, future 20th century dictators, one very particular little Austrian-born one, kind of were very, you know, looked to Napoleon and were very impressed with him and his achievements and things like that. So, the movie is very problematic in terms of fact.
Okay,
in terms of some fact. Now, like yourself, I haven't seen it yet. But one of the big talking points is the pyramids. In the trailer, he shoots the top off one of the pyramids at Giza with cannons. That never actually happened. Okay. So Ridley Scott has apparently pointed out that, it's more of a symbolic moment in the movie to say that he was there, to say that he was in Egypt, that there was an Egypt campaign and so forth. But in general, no. And I think anyone, even not historically aware, would know that Napoleon didn't take the top off one of the pyramids, because it would be something that's very much talked about. So, there's lots of other stuff, like, he wasn't at the execution of Marie Antoinette, who was the last Queen of France, someone who has been the subject of many movies herself. He wasn't there. He was in a whole other part of the country. But for dramatic license purposes, the producers thought to the director and the writer thought to put him in the crowd at her execution in order to take France, if you like, out of the revolutionary phase and into the Napoleonic era. So,
okay,
yeah,
interesting. I can't wait to have this argument with my husband on Friday. We're going on a nice date night and going to see Napoleon, but I'm going to be arguing all these facts that it's not his.
Well, with all that argument, I hope with all that arguing that you're planning now with each other, you know, I hope it stays into a nice night, you know.
I hope I get dinner out of it. At least I might do the dinner first.
Get the dinner and get the dinner paid for and then do a runner. Yeah.
Can we talk about other quote-unquote historical movies? Let's start with Irish ones. What about Michael Collins? Talk to us about that.
Well, you see, this is where I am a bit more forgiving, because Ridley Scott's response to his critics on Napoleon has been very arrogant and very aggressive and very much kind of, you know, screw you.
Yeah.
And whereas with the historical inaccuracies in Michael Collins, Neil Jordan has, you know, all through the year subsequently has been at pains to explain why he did certain things and why certain things were presented in the way they were. And so I can kind of forgive that, if you like.
Yeah.
Now, I think Neil Jordan is a genius, okay? I think he's an amazing, amazing filmmaker, and I love each and every one of his movies. Now, one of the big things, however, in Michael Collins is that Bloody Sunday 1920 at Croke Park, that one of the big moments that history has commemorated from that era, and we've commemorated it in the last few years, the centenary. The scene in the movie is dramatized. 14 civilians lost their lives, we know that. But mm-hmm. the movie shows the British firing into dense crowds with mounted machine guns and armoured vehicles from the pitch. The truth is that from the playing field of Croke Park, the truth is that the shooting happened by hand and the armoured vehicle stood outside Croke Park. Now, Neil Jordan has admitted that he did exaggerate that for a 30-second scene, OK? What I would say is that the reality is horrific enough. So the armoured cars and so forth, they were on the perimeter of Croke Park that day, and they fired from kind of the perimeter, not from the pitch. But what I would say is that the reality of Bloody Sunday was horrific enough on its own, and they could easily have, well, easily, I say that, I mean, you know, I'm not a filmmaker, but they could have, I suppose,
stuck
to the truth and still make it as dramatic and as horrible as it was. So, as I said, British tanks, British armoured cars did not invade the pitch. So he kind of explains that he wanted the scene to have more impact and to last longer than 30 seconds. But he rightly emphasises, Jen, and this is why I'm more forgiving of the historical inaccuracies here. He rightly emphasises that viewers should appreciate Michael Collins, the movie, as a work of art rather than, you know, assuming it's a definitive historical account. He suggests that the film might serve as a catalyst, encouraging people to delve into history books for more accurate details about the events it depicts. In other words, if you want to know more about the subject matter, let the movie be the thing that sparks your curiosity.
I don't know, Connor. I think that's a bit of a cop-out from a filmmaker. I mean, I think if you are going to make a movie about historical events, and these are movies that a lot of young people go to see or whatever, and they can't be arsed to read a history book, they have a duty. They have a duty to depict and show the truth. You know what I mean? I feel like I've been hard done by now going to see Napoleon. I haven't even seen it yet. Can we talk about Titanic for a second? I mean, How does that hold up in real life events?
Well, Titanic, I mean, there was some very deep criticism at the time, from what I remember, of again, some of the depictions of some of the characters, some of the depictions of the drunkenness, of the speed with which the ship went down, because some of the characters, some of the characters were fictionalized. Some of the characters were very ever so slightly based on real people. Descendants were able to recognize people from the the wealthier classes of the ship, so to speak. And so they were, they contested that, if you
okay.
like. And so much of all of this is contested. Now, so also with Titanic, you know, you have questions over the role of the captain.
Yeah.
And questions over the role of roles of some of the very senior officers. The first officer, he's portrayed as dismissing and even shooting passengers before shooting himself. Now, he is one of those who's based on a real character, but he wasn't the nasty kind of villain that he was pointed out to be. He was actually a hero, and he filled multiple lifeboats before losing his own life in the tragedy. So, again, that's where you can say you're slightly hard done by that, mm-hmm. Because that was a real, real person. As I say, in the fictional creations, the two central characters, Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, their characters were completely fictional, but they were put there to represent the experiences of others. So they were like a compendium of characters.
I don't think we mind that. But now hearing the facts about the captain is actually, it's disconcerting, because I had this preconceived idea or this vision, or, you know, after seeing the film, that it was kind of his fault. You know what I mean? And that man has...
I'm feeling guilty. I'm ruining your movie experience.
You're ruining it. You need to get a job. You need to put a call out now too, because there's a lot of stuff being made in Ireland, and if they're going to make anything about history or historical events, you need to be on that set and work through that script.
They need to hire me as a consultant, really, don't they?
That's what you need to do.
They've missed the beat for at least 20 years here, you know?
Exactly. You've done the work.
I'll tell you one that really kind of... staying with the Titanic team doesn't float my boat very well,
yeah.
Which is a movie called From Hell. Okay, now this maybe is not a blockbuster that people remember in the same way as the ones that we've heard about, we've just been speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Johnny Depp movie from about 2001, and I was in college at the time. I was in uni in Galway at the time, and I was studying crime history, which I went on to do as a profession. And so this tells the story of Inspector Fred Aberline and his investigations into the Whitechapel murders in the autumn winter of 1888 in London, the so-called Jack the Ripper murders. Now, as I say, this is in my ballpark, Jen. It's my time period. I'm a crime historian. Also, I've studied a lot of social history, particularly history of women, impoverished women and so forth. So this movie, From Hell, it gets an awful lot right, actually. Now, it's a Jack the Ripper movie, so
okay.
it has to have its theory at the end as to who he was and how the movie unmasks him, as they think, as the filmmakers see it. But, you know, we don't know the definitive answer to that. But it gets a lot right, as I say, and it's based on real characters. But one quibble I came away with, and people will say I'm being very pernickety here, and I still can't reconcile, is the glamorous presentation of one of the key characters, Mary Kelly. She was the Ripper's final known victim. And she's played by Heather Graham in this movie. Fantastic actress and a fantastic performance in this, actually, because she's quite restrained and quite good. And I think she probably stays loyal to the character. However, for me, I think the physical and well-dressed and unblemished body of the character is simply not credible. Mary Kelly was what we might term a streetwalker in one of the most deprived urban areas of the British Empire at the end of the 1880s. So, many such women in the neighbourhood, they were in bits. They were doing what they did,
yeah.
Living with the deprivation they incurred, that they experienced. They have been malnourished to various degrees,
yeah.
Fond of alcohol, skin blemishes.
Yeah.
And I don't think she was presented the opposite by the filmmakers. I don't think it was an error. I think the character was purposefully romanticised, if you like. So I don't know what to feel about that, but it has always niggled me. Now, a bigger problem, though, in the movie, and one I forgive less easily, is that Mary Kelly and Frederick Aberline never actually met during her life, because he was the detective who went on to investigate her death. So, you know, but the movie had them research. The movie had them meeting each other and encountering each other before death, her death, and that didn't happen.
You're like, imagine going to the cinema, Connor, lads. You'd be like, that didn't happen. Come here, can we?
This is why I prefer to go to see Batman than Napoleon.
Safer. You know what I mean? Safer. Well, can we talk about Braveheart really quickly? Because I'd say that just drove you around the bend, did it?
Well, now, this is my great shame, right? I was about almost this many years old, up to about 2 months ago, I had never watched Braveheart, for shame on me as
a
historian.
For shame on you.
Yes. Okay, again, William Wallace, and I love the movie, by the way. You know, really good movie, good old romp. Mm-hmm. In the movie, William Wallace comes from humble beginnings, and he's just a poor Highlander from the Highlands of Scotland, but it's believed that he was of noble birth.
Surely.
Well, you know, if you saw my hair, Jen, you'd be envious. Well, I'd be envious.
So he was of noble birth. Okay, well, that's a big shock.
So
that's a big shocker.
This is where you say the war paint on his face, on Mel Gibson's face, the blue paint, you know. That wasn't used at the time. That became people's Halloween costumes in the year after that movie came out.
Yeah.
So what do you do with that, you know? So he was, we do see a less exaggerated version of his ending in the movie. I don't want to give away the ending, which I suppose everyone has seen it at the moment.
Oh, come on, you can do a spoiler. I think the movie's 25 years old.
I think it is. I can go there, can't I? Yeah. No spoilers here. The nature of his exaggeration, or the nature of his execution, I suppose, was was under-exaggerated, put it that way.
Okay.
And it's morning radio, so I better be careful. You know, people could be still having a late breakfast.
Yeah, it's quite grim, the death of William
Wallace.
Yes, it's very, very grim.
So,
you're saying it was more grim in the history books?
It was more grim, apparently. Holy
And now, isn't that mad that producer or that director didn't go for the more, you know, the grim?
Well, yes, you would think so. And, you know, you have to question those decisions behind it, because you would think the more grim, the more bloody, gory it would be, but then it may push up the old categorization of the movie in terms of the ages who can go
and see
it.
That's very true.
And cut out a whole audience. And so, you know, there's an awful lot to say there, but there's, you know, it is a movie. Now, the Braveheart period, however, is one for which a lot of that can be contested because of the period in time. Not everything is black and white in terms of what's known, okay? Historical documents will be, the farther back you go, will be more rare, will be less clear. So over time, I think things get, you know, they get diluted in history a little bit, you know, and sometimes filmmakers have to create new realities. But I will say, and it goes back to a point you said earlier, which is, If it's kind of known, if something is known and we can clarify it and the reality is known and there, then why step away from that? Why shy away from that?
Get yourself on these sets, will you? Sort your life, Connor. But, come on. Get away from the books. Get on the film sets. It's great crack
This is the thing. Ridley Scott could have avoided so much criticism if he turned Napoleon into a trilogy. You cannot, Jen, have the life of someone like Napoleon in a 2 or 3 hour movie and think that you're going to recount his whole career. Do Lord of the Rings on it. Do a, you know, Planet of the Apes on it or something.
The Apes, Connor. I love how you said that.
There's just an idea.
Are you telling me that wasn't real either? I'm only joking. Connor, I am going to forfeit. I'm going to protest. I'm saying no to Napoleon. I'll say yes to the Mexican dinner we're going to have on Friday, but I'm going to put my foot down and go, this has historical inaccuracies. My pal Connor told me on the radio show, so I'm not going to go and see it.
But, doesn't it make all that expensive popcorn and fizzy drink and pick and mix and cheese nachos a lot more expensive now?
It does.
You know, doesn't that all feel a little bit more expensive?
Well, I think we've all learned a lesson today, and that is don't believe everything you see on the screen, any screen, you know?
And don't listen to preachy historians.
Oh, no, listen to them. They've done the research, you know what I mean? Anybody who's taken the time out and has studied for years, I would take your word over Ridley Scott's now.
I think, you know, we shouldn't be preachy either, and I try not to be, but I will say to, you know, Sir Ridley Scott, if you're listening, you know what? There's no need to get snarky at historians for our commitment to the truth and to trying to stay loyal to history. You know, you've done what you do, but don't expect us not to do what we do. This is our craft and that's your craft, you know. So have a few manners.
Yeah, have a few manners. Really. He's always listened to the show. I think he's just texting to play Partners Under Pressure, has he? Yeah, we'll get him on. We won't get him on today.
This is the critique he was waiting for. We know that, don't we, really? Like, you know.
But we'll go in with open eyes and an open mind, and we will. Your words will resonate with us when we sit and watch these movies, and will ruin every historical movie.
That's quite scary, you know.
Connor, it's fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for joining me today. There we go. That is Connor, professional historian and book editor, Dr. Connor Reedy, speaking to us there about a lot of historical inaccuracies that some people take as facts. For some Hollywood movies. Very interesting. Like I said, don't believe everything you see on the screen, my friends.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.